Boom. Ladies and gentlemen, the music ends, and thus we start talking. This is William Tincup, and my co-partner is in Southern... I have two co-partners now. I have to actually remember that now. But Brian is in Southern Oklahoma with a bunch of family members. He had I think his uncle passed over the weekend. So if you know Brian, please send him an email or just kind of reach out to him. His family's going through kind of a tough stretch, but he's down there supporting them and thus not on the call. And we have a fantastic guest. We're going to get to John right now. John, if you'll do us a favor, those that don't know you or aren't following you online, will you introduce yourself for us?
Sure. And William, thank you for having me on the program. I'm excited. So my name is John Wilson. I'm the CEO of Wilson HCG. We are a RPO based in Tampa, Florida. I've been in business for about 10 years, and we represent, for those of you who aren't familiar with RPO, but we fill thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs a year for our clients, and in most cases we are their internal recruitment function or an extension of their internal recruitment team.
Well, let's do the normal question, which you know, which is keeping you up at night. Let's do that on twofold. Let's first of all, because you know you run this place, and it's a fantastic company to work with. I want to ask you the first question: is what's keeping you, John, up at night? And then I want you to take it also as what's keeping your clients up at night.
That's a great question, William. So for me, it is, I think there's this big struggle in the marketplace right now where as the market shifts from being in a recessionary type labor market to being a time where people need to attract top talent, there's this big struggle between companies that think their corporate brand is also their employment brand. And we see that all the time, where we have an organization that is a great client of ours. It's in the manufacturing sector, and they have such a great organization, but their employment brand is so weak, and we're working with them on trying to fix that, and it's nothing that they're doing wrong other than it's almost what they're not doing right. And so it is nobody wants to see a picture of a semiconductor unit on a website and say, wow, I really want to work at that place. So it's differentiating that brand and company to understand that, and specifically the marketing people, because as you and I both know, you go in and the marketers that are there, their focus and sole goal is to market their product or service to drive sales back to their business. But when it's about attracting employees, people don't work for Samsung because they have a nice Galaxy phone. They work for Samsung because it's a great place to work. And so getting that message out to individuals that could potentially work at your firm is much more important than using Samsung again as an example, is, you know, having your career portal show a bunch of Galaxy phones. So that would be the number one thing that we're trying to get people to, and some companies are great at it, but really trying to get our prospects and our clients to understand the importance of having a strong employment brand as this market shifts from people coming to you to you needing to go out to them and making them want to work for you. It's been a struggle.
Nice. Hey, John, this is Nisha. Well, talking about this employer brand, you know what, every employee or every person they have their own brand, right? So what is your take on, you know, how can an employer inculcate their employer brand along with that employee's personal brand so that it won't collide and can bring its success together?
That's a great question. The employment brand is really your company's culture. It's who you are. And so, and similar to a person's own brand. And you can go into a company that's in the ultra high tech space, and a company that's been around for 200 years, and they may have very, very similar employment brands, where it's a great place to work. It's all about innovation, free thinking and thought, and can be someplace that people really want to work. It's a great place to be. On the other side of that, you can have a product or a service that is innovative and fun and very exciting, and it's someplace that that an individual would really think, wow, I would love to work there, but their culture isn't conducive to being a good environment. And so it's very difficult for organizations to understand their culture outside of, I'll give you an example. I was at a Fortune 500 company 2 weeks ago, and it was great. They had a DNA about what it meant to work at their company. And it broke everything down on who they were as an organization. And it's something that they communicated with internally and evaluated their internal employees on that. And I said to them, why aren't you putting that out there? Why can't somebody who's thinking about applying to a job here understand the DNA of your organization? And that thought was foreign to them, that why would we have that out there? But that reading that DNA made me like that company a lot better than if I just would have saw a picture of some guy wearing their shirt with their logo on.
Nice. John, let me ask about the RPO industry in particular, because you have a successful RPO. There's been some RPOs that have been they've gotten funding or they've been acquired, so there's been some movement in the space. What do we generally get right about RPO, and what do we get wrong about RPO?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've probably asked that very, very frequently. I think RPO is acronym got put on what we do to generalize it. And in reality, I think RPO is very different to most organizations. At least I know what we do. We consider how we position RPO a little bit different than some of our competitors. And so when RPO was first brought up and using it, we always like to use that as they said, let me give you my mess for less. And RPO is about cutting costs and reducing liability, reducing internal employees by going to an RPO. And I think as the landscape has shifted, where companies now are not buying or wanting the big box RPO solution that is, we're going to do it our way and you're going to like the way we do it, or we're not going to do business together. I think RPOs had to become much more flexible, where you build a solution around your client to, A, now attract better talent. As I mentioned, building out an employment brand, doing all the things that are adding value to an organization, not just saving cost. And so to answer your question, where organizations do the right thing with RPO is – they outsource the pieces of where they need help, what can be done better. When we get an RFP or a company calls us and wants to talk and say, you know, we have 25 recruiters and all we want to do is save cost, and I have, you know, something from our COO says we need to cut recruitment by 35%, we look at that situation, and a lot of times we say, well, we're not the right partner for you if your sole goal is cutting cost. Because what that usually means is a lower quality recruitment process, where it's both sides are set up not to be successful. So the organizations that want to get better, RPOs can be so good for a company. We see it every day. When a company's sole focus is cost cutting, they're most likely going to see the result of that cost cutting. Not to say that even when they're getting better and the organizations that want to get better, most of our clients will see a 15-20% cost decrease, if not more, and then the quality of service is going up a tremendous amount. So to answer your question, William, it is the when your sole focus is cost with anything, the result's not good. When you want to improve your business, RPO is great.
Great, great insights, John. Well, that's a really great point that, you know, attracting better talent and then the best talent, it's not about cost-cutting anymore. Well, you know what? You work with different clients who have their own unique culture. And it's really imperative that, you know, we have to hire for that company's culture or your client company's culture in order to have a mutual success, right? So what's your take on that?
Well, a company's culture is, in my eyes, whether, and we all have walked into companies that are great brands and are very successful, and you walk into talent acquisition and you think, oh my gosh, how is this company even in business? Because it's so bad. But they've become good and attracted good people despite their talent acquisition department. So you need to make sure that you'd never lose an organization culture when they outsource. So, for example, when we would go into a company, we spend an enormous amount of time on the front end of the process understanding who they are. We also want to make sure that when we start with a company, if they haven't gone to RPO before in the past, we don't necessarily want to say outsource everything. You don't need to outsource everything all at once. So the hiring managers and the people who are the stakeholders still have some of the contacts that they've always had, understand, and you can make an organization's talent acquisition department much better by sometimes highlighting their culture that has gone away and it's all about filling racks. So the culture piece with any company is paramount when we're going through our implementation and discovery process at the very beginning of our conversations.
In general, John, I want to get your take on recruitment technologies. You've been following this space for a long time. You probably used everything under the sun. And specifically, I want to see if there's anything out there that you're aware of that's predictive that helps us nail fit. So in general, what recruitment technology, but specifically around fit?
That's interesting. I don't know if the magic bullet is there yet, but I think taking multiple different technologies and utilizing them, maybe not to their fullest, but using them where they make sense in your process, you can get there. And so we've recently, we spent the last year evaluating video interviewing companies because we just weren't comfortable with the compliance, the situation that we felt around video interviewing. We also have enlisted some assessments, different partnerships where the technology, you can use bits and pieces of each to make, hopefully get to that fit. But so far, William, I haven't seen anything that can come in and say, here's taking all that big data or an individual's resume and a job description and match it perfectly and have a predictive result. I think this is whenever it does come out or somebody does create it and it's foolproof, that would be a company we'd all want to partner with.
Nice. Well, that virtual aspect reminds me to talk about social recruiting a little bit. So I'd like to hear your opinion or your advice on, you know, how to use social media to optimize recruitment strategy as well as from a client perspective as well as from an employer perspective.
Well, it's interesting because I think we when Twitter became something that was undeniable that if you were in recruitment, you had to have some sort of a presence. And the same thing with LinkedIn. And I think they're vastly different in what their function is for a recruiter or a talent acquisition department, LinkedIn is about finding people. Bottom line, and Twitter is all about branding. And so as long as you understand that those are what they are, then you're going to be very successful with it. And I think with an organization goes out, I'll give an example. We have a Twitter account that we just feed out jobs from our clients. And really we don't see a very, very much of a return on it at all. But from a corporate side, when we're working with our clients and their Twitter accounts and ours, we're able to see even the people who are looking for jobs, they'll respond more to something like that, like, here's the organization, just won XYZ award, or here's something innovative we're doing. Just purely communicating on Twitter, you'll get something there. But going to LinkedIn, if you're trying to find somebody to fill a role, so far that has been much more beneficial for us and our clients as Twitter. And then bringing both those together, where I think you have Facebook that is good for both on a lesser extent.
Nice. John, let me piggyback that a little bit on the visual side. Do you see resumes or do you see the talent acquisition market, you know, exploring YouTube as a visual medium or Pinterest, you know, boards or Instagram? Do you see us using those more in the future and kind of using the visual job description, job ad, and recruitment technology? Do you see us using those more or less, or like what's the future there?
Yeah, I really don't know. I think we have to look at these technologies and how they can better assist us. And for example, with Pinterest, I mean, the big advantage we've had with Pinterest is we'll use it for some clients when they're onboarding to have a new hire take 15 minutes and fill out a Pinterest page, and then when they actually start, they have a little bit of knowledge of what that individual's interests are. But from a recruitment perspective, I think a lot of those, whether it's YouTube or Pinterest, it's all of if you're searching for people and you're not using it for branding, you're rather using it to attract people for individual jobs, I think the SEO on that is very important. So if someone's Googling something related to a certain field or job function, having something on a Pinterest or YouTube, YouTube especially, I know you have much better SEO results on YouTube than you would on just a typical static web page or a monster posting or something of that sort.
Nice. Well, the social recruiting aspect is quite challenging and always constantly changing as well. And being human capital leader, I would think that your majority of the success factor relies on the bottom level employees or bottom line people. That's the recruiters. So how do you keep your recruiters stay current in terms of social recruiting new tools and techniques?
Yeah, for us, we have about 80% of our employees or our recruiters are virtual, spread throughout in North and South America. And then we have a good contingent of people that sit here in Tampa. For us, it's constant engagement, because I think when we roll out a new tool, as we rolled out a video interviewing tool that we're implementing on a few different clients right now. And so what we did for Valentine's Day is we had somebody sent out a link, and most people talk about how you met your partner or your significant other, and we did how you met Wilson HCG. So it gave all our employees a chance to get familiar and get comfortable with the video interviewing tool. Very similar with Twitter and all the other social media recruitment techniques. We give constant training that goes on what the new techniques are. So we have two people in our organization, one that focuses on our corporate brand that is responsible for handling our social media that goes out about us. And then on each account, we'll have someone who will take on that responsibility for our clients. But we also have someone that is a stretch, is a recruiter that works here, that recruiting is their function, but they have this a whole other position that is about finding new technologies and training our current staff on new technologies and new ways to attract talent from a social perspective.
Genius. Genius, genius, genius. A quick reset. We've got about 9 minutes left. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Fantastic discussion so far. John, let me pivot you into, you've obviously been doing this for a long time, your best interview question, your favorite interview question that you love to ask people. And the second part of that is the worst recruitment experience you've ever seen or heard of.
Okay. I have two interview questions I ask. Am I allowed to William?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course.
I always ask people what's more important to you, winning or how you play the game. And so if they say winning, they're out because I think that, to me, hiring a good person is way more important than hiring a good performer. You can teach performance. You can't teach integrity. Second is I take a person through a scenario of going to a very nice restaurant to impress somebody and the service is absolutely horrible and it is the worst service you could ever imagine, and then I ask them how they'd handle that situation. And you'd be surprised how many people, or at least I'm surprised, how many people will say, you know, I would tell the waitress what the heck is going on, this is supposed to be a special night, da 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 da, and yell at the waitress when I'm just looking for, I would go to the manager, figure out what's going on, ask them how to make it right, really just try to understand their problem-solving ability. Worst recruitment experience, I'll take some blame on this. One of our directors, when I was hiring her 4 years ago or 5 years ago, I put her through the worst recruitment experience I could ever imagine. So I wanted to hire her, but we just didn't have a job open for her at the time. And so I kept interviewing her. So it would be once a month I'd call her and I'd say, Jill, do you have a few minutes? You know, I have another interview. You know, I want to have a few more questions I want to ask, all this stuff. So it took me 6 months to interview her. She has said now that she carried notes around in a binder everywhere she went. So because my interviews were so random and, it was bad. She's been with us a long time, done a great job. But I'm very thankful that I put her through the worst interview process and we were lucky to still have her.
Well, great to hear that. Well, I read that Wilson HCD has been ranked as the best place to work in 2012 in Florida Trend magazine. So let's talk a little bit about the work culture at Wilson HCD, obviously your deep commitment to diversity and inclusion. So let's dig into this.
Yeah, so I think, well, with diversity, That's a good point. Our organization is our diversity is what we would go after to hire diverse for our organization is much different than most. What I think a lot of organizations understand is diversity doesn't always mean ethnicity. It can also mean gender. It can also whatever it is, you want the most diverse group of people you can have, because whether you're selling something or you're recruiting somebody, our population is overall very diverse, and having those insights is very helpful. For what we do that we think is special or we do a little bit different than other organizations has helped us gain some of those recognitions. we focus on giving people the tools to be successful and leading them and not necessarily managing them. So for a vast majority, as I mentioned, of our employment population are working virtual, and those people are able to have flex schedules. They have numbers that they need to meet. They know what they need to do to be successful. And going back to my earlier point of hiring good people is really what has made our organization special.
Genius. We've got about 4 minutes left. I want to ask the, is it different in your experience of recruiting high performers versus those that aren't high performers? Is there a different experience, or do they have different needs when you recruit high performers?
Yeah, I preface it by, I don't say we would ever shy away from high performers. And if you have a high performer that's a great human being, that's the best person you can ever hire. But you know, when someone success at an earlier stage in their career, and they, and I saw this much more at the start of my career, where you'd have people who did very in the late 90s and early 2000s, and then it's 04, 05, and the economy slowed down a little bit, and they had higher expectations of where they should be because of the success they had earlier in their career. So you have a little bit of a sense of an entitlement, but I really believe that this generation, Gen Y, that everybody says is lazy, they have actually, I look at them and you see a lot less entitlement that I've witnessed personally, because these people, whether they either got out of school post 9/11, they've experienced a horrible economic condition from the time that they got out of school to the ones that are getting out now, that parents may or may not have struggled paying through school, or they're strapped with all these loans. I think this generation that we have right now is this Gen Y that's going to become the majority of our workforce, as strong as it gets, and truly amaze me every day with some of the work product that they can perform.
Awesome. Well, brother, show's over. How can people reach out to you after the show and or follow you on the Twitters or your company website?
Absolutely. It's wilsonhcg.com. Connect with me on LinkedIn or Twitter at Wilson CEO. Thank you very much for having me on today. It was a fun experience.
Well, thanks for dropping the knowledge, brother, and have a wonderful afternoon. And everyone, thanks for listening to Drive Through HR and letting us invade your ear hole. I put on the back of my bike, you know.